Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
Listen to Viewpoint, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs show with a panel of invited guests where we discuss the issues of the day. Joining me on today's programme, Heather Tesco, Robert McCangas and Nathan Thomas. We'll move away from saber-rattling in North Korea, but we're still keeping things with the US focus after the tragic events in Charlottesville, Virginia over the weekend. Three deaths, one woman rammed by an alt-right demonstration. I think we can say over the weekend, and also two troopers killed in a helicopter crash who were policing the situation. President Trump came in for an awful lot of criticism over the weekend when he didn't single out the far right group, saying he was condemned all violence. However, in the last 24 hours, he has said that racism is evil and those who cause violence in its names are criminals and thugs. Nathan, your thoughts on what happened in Virginia, and sort of set the scene as well a little bit.
Well, as far as Trump, and I mean, again, it was a demonstration that everybody knew was going to turn violent. I mean, I don't think there was much question about that. I mean, I'm not sure whether the police could have handled it better or not. The biggest problem seems to be that they did or couldn't prevent the two groups from, you know, getting close to each other. I mean, that's usually the first thing that when they're aware of a situation like that is try to keep the two groups separate and prevent the violence from happening. And for whatever reason, they weren't able to do that. So you had a lot of violence, which no one really was surprised at. The big, you know, national story in this, of course, was the reaction of the president, who was very vague in his condemnation, condemning basically violence in general and so on in the beginning. And then that was Saturday night, Sunday, the White House coming out trying to again explain, well, what he really meant to say was, you know, something stronger. And finally yesterday he did, after there had been a very, very strong reaction from a lot of different areas, both geographically and the business community and so on in the States, just, you know, very upset that Trump was not more specific in his condemnation of what happened.
And this is a demonstration that was focused around what was a statue of Robert E. Lee, Confederate general, quite shocking to see Nazis, you know, swastikas being displayed, you know, quite prominently in, you know, in Virginia, and Confederate flags being waved as well. The rise of the alt-right. Nathan, I'll just let, I think I had to come out on this quite quickly.
Well, you know, the United States has, I think it's 1,500 memorials to the Confederate Army, to the Civil War, in it, with different high school names and statues and things like that. People want to say, oh, well, this is part of our history. And it is part of our history, and that deserves to definitely be taught. It's also a part of our history that lost. So, you know, there's that. And it's also a part of our history that was dedicated to keeping an entire race of people down. And people want to say, oh, well, it's states' rights. And, you know, it wasn't actually over slavery. It was over states' rights. That's all well and good. But the fact of the matter is that those monuments are hurtful and are constant reminders of a time period that we would like, that many people would like to forget about and move on from, and yet it still keeps coming back, and it still keeps coming back. So it's fine to teach the history. And people say, oh, well, our culture is being, you know, we're not being able to teach this stuff anymore. We are teaching it. I learned it. People learn it. We don't need to have statues up for it. And the thing about his reaction was, yesterday when Kenneth Frazier, the Merck CEO, was the first one to step off of his advisory council, it took him 54 minutes to respond on Twitter to that. 54 minutes. So we know that he can respond when he's angry about stuff. We know he can respond by name to people. We know he can call people out. 54 minutes it took him. It took him 2 days to respond to this and call out the alt-right and call Nazis Nazis. And, you know, his non-answer is deafening to me. And that's just enough for me. I don't need to hear any more from him.
Nathan.
Yeah, again, the actual rally, demonstration, whatever it was supposed to be and whatever it turned into over the statue, I mean, there have been, you know, those things going on for a while because more and more states, cities, whatever, are making a decision either to keep these historic monuments, statues, whatever, or to get rid of them. And there is a division there. I mean, some people say, no, it is our history, and we don't. There's no reason to get rid of it. But, you know, other people say it should be, you know, wiped off the face of the, you know, the park where the guy on the horse is sitting. So there is this controversy over whether the history, you know, should remain or not. And they, you know, the alt-right used this weekend. They staged the rally, but it was known and it was basically publicized that, okay, the statue was the focal point of it, but really it had very little to do with it. It was a much more, you know, us against them and the alt-right, you know, gathering together, because a lot of these people, it wasn't a local thing. It wasn't like, you know, all local groups that, well, we want the statue to stay. No, we want the statue to go. This was people who drove hundreds of miles, were basically bussed in for a rally that was going to turn into violence, if at all possible, in the minds of many. And it did.
We have a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
I'm Kate Costa-Blanca.
Okay.
I want to come up with a slightly hysterical, oh, sorry, heretical view. Spain started this business of trying to take down stuff to Franco, statues, etc. At the time, it seemed to me unwise. You know, that's part of history. It's part of the whole country's history, not just those people who might still support Francoist type policies. In America, where you've got all these guns, and it seems to me foolish to do so. And it's one of those issues which there isn't a moral right and wrong. It's a question of judgment and wisdom. What you do that can be used as an inflammatory gesture.
So
I would say that I think the whole business of trying to dismantle history is rather foolish.
Well,
unwise.
Heather.
Just for me to put in, I grew up about 100 miles from the Gettysburg battlefield. And when you travel the Gettysburg battlefield, there are monuments to both sides. And
yes,
it looks very clearly at, you know, what the battle was in those 3 days and all of it. And I don't think people are trying to get away from the history of it so much. I think we need to learn the history. If we don't learn the history, you know, people will never know. I think that's part
right.
of what happens right here is people forget what Nazis stood for. People forget what this stuff means. I don't think there's any reason to not learn the history. I think there's a reason to not have in these southern towns like New Orleans that also have a history, a deep history of lynching, of white supremacy, of the KKK, even as recently, you know, in the generations, not necessarily, in this generation, I remember things when I was growing up of black men being dragged behind cars and these lynchings, just there's nothing else to call it, lynchings that happen in these places. And to keep up memorials to the people who were part of that in these places where the population has been so affected, I can't imagine what it's like to be a black man in New Orleans.
No, you can't. And one part of my point is that quite often the people who are proposing and getting through the let's pull down the statues are not the blacks themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm talking about it from a different perspective, which is one I thought you would have shared because you're a historian. It's the ability to look over and see what kind of things cause problems. The removal of the statues does not negate, doesn't stop any of those horrific things happening. They happened.
Mm-hmm.
And your example about the Gettysburg area, where both sides are respected, the fallen in both sides are respected, that seems to be the ideal. But I would not disturb a statue with a zap. It could, you know, you were talking about the North Korea versus USA, you know, who's going to shoot first. If you're looking for a fight and someone does something that's against your history, you know, but why do it? It seems to me gratuitous. And, you know, part of the kind of political correctness that's of the worst kind. So I'm just saying it's unwise.
Not wrong, but
unwise.
I definitely see your point with that. And I think that there is a place to learn these things. I think that Gettysburg as a national monument, as a national memorial, as a national park, is a place to have these kinds of thoughtful discussions. I think having a statue of Robert E. Lee up in a city park where the population is predominantly black, and it's not like there's any kind of context for it. It's not like there's any kind of let's have a discussion.
No, but it's been there for some time, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean,
leave it gathering dust and moss.
The thing is, Kate, that we should not say that this perhaps becomes a rallying point from certain people who have their own agendas.
It does now, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. But
notice the tense. It does now.
Yes, I agree with you, Kate.
Yeah.
You're talking about the statue all of a sudden obtaining notoriety because now you have all the people complaining about it and the alt-right coming in and doing battles over it. That's really what you're discussing.
I'm saying that the idea to take things down that have been there for some time accentuates the kind of points that you don't want accentuating. Let people forget. Well, you not remember who the person was.
Well, in the UK, we have a whole series of statues of battles of people. Whether it be Cromwell, Wallace, whomever it happens to be, they're all part of our history. And we accept that. We accept the people that committed terrible deeds. We accept that. It's done. And we've learnt from it. The problem is at the moment is that I see in the States that the alt-right have a different agenda. They don't give a damn about the fact that it was Robert E. Lee. As my colleagues just said here, these people got bussed in, they moved in, they came in, they came to fight. I can't for the life of me associate a swastika with the South. I don't see it.
But hang on, you just said they came in for a fight because there was a move or it's been a... it's happened because of the...
It could have been the opening of Tesco.
I do see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I think that, a part of this, you see this in Berkeley with the alt-right speakers coming. I think that they should definitely be able to come and ignore them. I think that would be the greatest statement in the world, is to have these people come and have Berkeley, just have them speak to a crowd of two people
The reason they came was because they were going to try and take the statue down. Mm-hmm. Yeah? So that's the first...
Yeah. That
seemed to me the own goal.
The thing I see about you mentioning the statues and things like that is, I'm not an expert on the English Civil War and Cromwell and all of that, but from what I understand, you guys didn't fight a war over the right to own Puritans as slaves or Catholics as slaves and buy and sell.
We had serfdom already in place.
By that point, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, serfdom was there for a long time.
Okay.
Irresponsible kingship is the issue with the Civil War.
Absolutely correct. Yes.
Sure. But, I guess the thing is, this is a population that is... was actually a majority in the South. There were more black people, or just as many. I don't know the exact statistics, but they were being sold as human chattel.
Yes.
And I think that it's okay to have these places, these kinds of discussions put in context. I think that we should have museums about these. Perhaps every state should have a museum about this, where you have a discussion in context about the slave trade, about how it started, and all of that. But to just leave a monument up with no context, that's, I think, the thing that really bothers me.
You're interfering with what's happening by pulling down what has been up.
Kate, thank you for your call in there, as always. 952-78-4000, the phone number. studio@talkradioeurope.com, the email and the Facebook page. If you wish to leave a post about this issue, is Talk Radio Europe Official. On the emails, had an email in here saying, right then, SNK has come in saying, would anyone advocate retaining a statue of Hitler? And another one in from here saying, relocate all those statues to the same location. Being next to each other nullifies the notoriety and surely shows up the ridiculous waste of life that these things commemorate. Nathan?
Well, I think part of what Kate said is true. It is, it is politically correct now to get rid of symbols of the past, But it does, the fact of taking these statues down in different places does give a focal point to those who disagree with that. If indeed this was not an issue and the statues, nobody cared one way or the other, the alt-right, the white supremacists, they would find another excuse. It's just that this was a very easy one because it's become an issue and it gave them something to rally around. Whether ignoring it would have prevented something like this from happening, yes, probably in that location on that particular day. But the feeling is there, the organizations, the groups are there, and whether they do it over a statue of Robert E. Lee in Charlottesville or whether it flares up somewhere else for some other reason, it will flare up.
We have another caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hi, Giles. It's Jason.
Good morning, Jason.
Monuments. You can't rewrite history just by pulling monuments down. The real problem is any racism or things that exist at a real level. I mean, how far do you go with this? Then any monument in Britain or relating to Britain in America should be pulled down also, because we were complicit in that because of our need for cotton, supported the South indirectly, did we not?
In the Civil War?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was trading going on, yeah.
Right.
Trading, yes.
How
far do you go with it? You know, the statue is not the problem, and you can't erase history just by pulling things down. Mm. You know, it's all a bit nonsense, really. That's what I think about it.
The feeling, the controversy is still there. As I said, it is going to flare up from time to time. What causes it to flare up will be different things at different times at different places. The statues, taking them down, is kind of an easy draw for anyone who feels, you know, differently. So yes, it does create a problem because you again are making a change, and people who don't want that change, that gives them a reason to rally round. If nobody was taking those statues down, they would find another reason to have a rally and, you know, try to put forth their views one way or another.
Jason, Jason, your thoughts? Sorry.
How far do you go? For example, the cenotaph. You know, if the Great War, the war to end all wars, what do you do? Take that down? No, things like that exist to provide a context and a memory of things that happened. A monument can be a symbol of something bad that happened. Therefore, it should never be taken away because it reminds people where they come from, be it in a negative sense or a positive sense. I think it's a modern world just falling over itself to be politically correct. It's got itself in a bit of a tiz-wars and has some very silly perspective on things.
Jason, thanks for your call in. As always, we've got another caller on the line. We've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hi, it's Stephen.
Morning, Stephen.
With regards to ripping down the various statues or what have we, what they should do, and this is just my point, the people that walk around for these rallies wearing swastikas on their arms, I wonder how our older people feel that fought in two wars, lost a lot of lives, and they see these people walking around supporting the neo-Nazis. I mean, what's your view on that?
Come back on that one, Robert.
Yes, I think that's an excellent point that you've raised there. I really do. When I go to places like France and I see the battlefields and the crosses stretching away for acre after acre, I'm left with a sense of awe of men that gave their lives. When I see people, idiots, walking around with swastikas on their arms in the United States, after the amount of American men that lost their lives in Europe defending the Americas and defending Europe from the scourge of Adolf Hitler and his crew, I think that tears must be shed because of it, and I feel incensed. When I hear about Adolf Hitler's family house being torn down and purchased by the Austrian government to be pulled down, I am in ecstatic joy. because I don't want a rallying point for that sort of thing. Where we talk about the old historical places, I mentioned the Wallace and I mentioned Cromwell, just two names. They're in the past and we look at it and we learn, because there is things to be learnt from it. In the case of the Adolf Hitlers and those sort of people, we have learnt bitterly. We've learnt bitterly by acres and acres of crosses across fields. That's what we've learnt. It never, ever will be successful. And it doesn't matter whether you believe that inherently the right wing's the best thing that ever happened and that we can take on anybody, you're wrong. You're wrong, because the world's made up of black men, white men, yellow men, red Indians, and I use that not in a derogatory term, I use that in a term that we would all understand. We're made up of many, many, many people. And just because you have an ideology that thinks that you can go to battle and you can kill because you think that that's right, that is wrong. Because all of my gang, my red, white, yellow, green, blue, whatever colour you want, we're against them.
Stephen, does that answer your question?
That is fantastic. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much for your call indeed. 952-78-4000, the phone number. Studio at talkradioeurope.com is the email, and the Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official. I have an email in here saying, you can't rewrite history. The American Civil War happened. It was a different time, and with a different attitude to today. If the statues of Confederate generals are offensive, then the statues of Union generals, Sherman, Grant, etc., could be equally offensive to the people of the Confederate states. So should they be taken down too? I think so. From a listener said, rebel to the core, not a racist, just a rebel. Heather.
You know, I just want to say, I am really sick of this term of political correctness. You know, people want to put that. That's a word for all manner of sins. Political correctness. Oh, you can't say that because it's political correctness. And now these people are getting offended because it's political correctness. You know, political correctness is just being nice. I'm sorry. It's just not saying things that are mean. Okay. And I think, and I'm sorry, I'm really upset by this because this is my country, right? And this is like what's happening in the country that I love and the country that I, this rally in Charlottesville happened in a town that looks very much like the town that I grew up in. It was a couple hundred miles away. It could have been my town. And I don't know that people outside of the South understand, and in America, understand the systemic oppression that is still going on in America for black people, that is still happening. And to, yes, I don't think to rewrite history. I think we should have places to thoughtfully talk about this, and it should be talked about. But in certain schools in the South, they aren't even allowed to talk about slavery as an issue in the Civil War. They have to say it was states' rights. That's what it was. It was states' rights. They don't even mention slavery. They say Lincoln only said the Emancipation Proclamation because he needed the border states to come in to help against the South. They don't talk about it. People don't talk about it. And you have these still to this day, and I'm going to bring in something really kind of pop culture here. In the U.S., the Bachelorette was just going on, right? And they had the first black Bachelorette, right? It's like the Bachelorette. They had the first black Bachelorette. And people made a really big deal with this first black Bachelorette, and there were a couple of bachelors.
This is a reality TV show where you meet somebody,
yeah, okay, right? And it was the first time in history that they had a black woman who was the Bachelorette. And people were making comments when they were watching the Bachelorette. There were a couple main people who were well known saying, "Oh, I turned on the TV and I thought it was Love and Hip Hop, which is an MTV like kind of urban sort of show, right? And it was the Bachelorette." And like these kinds of comments just seep in, and you can say, "Oh, well, that's not offensive. Who cares?" But it's offensive when it's always there. And I think that's just the thing that I don't think people understand it. I'm white. I don't understand it, but I understand that I don't understand it, right? And I just think that there's a level of insensitivity to leaving these things up and not putting them in context. And that's the thing. I don't want to rewrite history. I think we all should learn this history. And I think there is proper places to do this. And leaving it in a place that is majority black when you've got this, and that Bachelorette's a silly example, but that's just the kind of, it's just all over. I don't think that people outside of the U.S., and I don't think that people understand what it is to be black in the U.S. I just don't think they do.
We go live to the phones. Good morning, Coolio, live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Charles, Peter again.
Yes, Peter.
America is not a racist country. I've mentioned this before, that how far they've come in since the days you're talking about to where they are now is phenomenal. They've done it at such a rate of speed, it's unbelievable. But racism does exist in America, and it does in all countries. And it's abhorrent, whichever way you look at it, whichever side you look at it from. It's whether it's bigotry, whether it's religion or colour or sex, it shouldn't happen, but it does. We live in a real world, and I'm a realist. But again, going back to the media, this is being portrayed. You keep using the words alt-right and white supremacist and these sort of things. Now, yes, there are pockets of those idiots there, but when it was Black Lives Matter, and I saw some stuff, and many of these people were calling themselves White Lives Matter. Very, very clever, put the spin on it. Because if you look at it, the two sides of the coin, and without trying to defend one or the other, at the Black Lives Matter rallies, there was many guys and women wearing a single black glove with signs of black power. This was going, but it wasn't being reported. Whereas this time, whereas the more passive ones you went there to against the political correctness are not getting reported on, but it's the white supremacists and those that are. So again, the media is whipping this up. Nobody seems to have noticed. You're talking America today, and you all seem to be American connected. Do any of you realise that President Trump called a national emergency last week?
No? Well, anyway, we're going to get away from it. We're trying to keep it on
well,
the.
Well, very quickly, yeah. He called a national emergency over the drug issue. 150 people are dying every day of legal drugs in America. So all lives matter. Yet that did not get reported. And the guy that resigned is head of Merck, who's the biggest drug dealer company in the world. So just put the connections together. For Christ's sake, it's not hard, is it?
Thank you for your call in, Peter.
I just want to... That national emergency example, to me, is another example of this everyday ongoing racism that the U.S. sees. It's a national emergency now that it has hit the suburbs of Philadelphia, of King of Prussia. That's now it's a national emergency. There have been these epidemics in the black community for ages, and it's, let's not declare a national emergency about it until it hits the white people. And I'm white. I'm sorry.
Right, then, we go live to the phones. They're busy, as always. Good afternoon, caller. Sorry, good morning, caller. Thank you for holding. What's your name? Where
okay. Morning, Sharon. Hello. Sharon Alicante, in full agreement with Heather, but said that we've learned from it. Have we learned from it? Arms industry to Yemen? We should probably also be discussing the crisis in Yemen. It's the biggest humanitarian crisis since God knows when, and we're behind that. We're funding the arms industry to Saudi, etc., etc. So we haven't learned, and we carry on not learning.
Thank you for your call. And another caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where you're calling from? Thank you for holding. And what is your viewpoint, please?
Hi, Giles. It's Sean Fuengirola.
Yes, sure.
Just a couple of quick points. First of all, well done, Sharon, for making the point about Yemen. But getting back to Virginia, congratulations to Peter for providing some very valuable perspective. It is absolutely the case that, of course, all decent people should abhor Nazism and Ku Klux Klan, etc. However, as Peter rightly pointed out, the real perpetrators and initiators of this, the ones who caused the aggro in the first place, were in fact Antifa, which is one of George Soros's funded groups, one of his many funded groups. And it's a nasty organization. It's basically anti-white men, and it's often white men themselves who are attacking other white men. It is total political correctness. How much Heather may dislike that. What these people use is urine, feces, and numerous other noxious substances to attack their enemies. And their enemies are often reporters from news organizations that are actually on their side. That's the incredible thing. They're so full of hatred and mindless violence, they'll even attack their own people. For example, if you search on Google and have a look at a WTVR CBS 6 journalist, so part of CBS, assaulted by an Antifa, i.e. anti-Nazi so-called protester, and many other examples of that. People trying to give press conferences, hounded by these characters.
Well,
that's
the
bad news.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is with that, thank you very much for your call in, but I mean, this is during, somebody has died, a woman has been killed, rammed in front of TV cameras by a car. Yeah, a woman, a 32-year-old, who said, you know, who was a demonstrator by an outright person. So I think to go the next day onto try and have a press conference, I don't know what they're thinking, because feelings were running high in that situation. And to go in and say, as one of the organisers of the outright rally, there was always going to be trouble in that one. Heather?
Well, I think that you cannot make a moral equivalence between Nazis and white supremacists and KKK people and Antifa and Black Lives Matter. There's no moral equivalence there for me. The KKK was rooted in oppression and in killing people and in threatening. And yes, you can say, okay, well, violence, like, I'm not going to say violence is good. Violence is never good. But the motives of Black Lives Matter isn't to eradicate white people. The motive of Black Lives Matter, from what I understand of it, is to have police officers accountable when they shoot black men and don't give them due process of the law. And then that turns violent because feelings run high. But the actual, you know, if you look at what it was founded in, the KKK was founded in oppression. Black Lives Matter is founded in trying to rise up from that oppression. So to me, that you can't make a moral equivalence there at all. And the people who are trying to do that, I think, are deeply misguided. And yes, violence is bad. Violence is horrible. You should never have violence. And in a perfect world, we would all rise above this and we would say, okay, we're all going to love each other and we're going to meet this KKK. And like, yeah, maybe that would make them feel, maybe that would make their image better if Black Lives Matter met the KKK with love and hugs. And I just don't think that that's particularly realistic, and they're not the same.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Listening to Viewpoint with me, Giles Brown. Just changed my name halfway through. Heather Tiesco, Robert McAngus, and Nathan Thomas. We go straight to the phones again. Good morning, Cooley. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where you're calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, Felix here.
Good morning, Felix.
Can you hear me? The history of this thing in this rally is that the organisers applied for permission 3 months ago, and received permission, and then things went on and on, and a few days before the rally was due to take place, the meeting was banned by the local political people, including the police, and with the meeting banned, then the organizer of the meeting, which was, I think, called Unite the Right, then went to the Supreme Court and applied on the basis of the First Amendment, freedom of speech. And the Supreme Court then said that this meeting has got a right to go ahead. So introduced into the situation a group called Antifa. And this is a tactic that is used time and time again throughout Europe, where they threaten violence. And this happened in this case, threats of violence against Black Lives Matter and so on. And the escalation of the situation then causes the meeting to be banned. So therefore, right of free speech is severely curtailed. The issue then centres on Trump. Trump referred to all sides. They weren't satisfied that this had to be just one side to be attacked. And Trump then, being a fairly weak man, relented. The other thing is, I'm mystified as to how a sitting president can be continually attacked in a war situation, as in Korea, when Korea was issuing threats against America. There's a petition in America to stand behind the sitting president, especially in a time of war. And a good example of this happening here is on this panel today. All the Americans attack Trump and they do not defend the president in a time of war. This is a new thing in America, I would say, serious thing. Just that's in addition to the main point I'm making about the actual history of this event in America. The actual history of it has not been spelled out by Nathan or by the other American guests, although they must know it. And that history is very, very, very important.
Thank you for your call in, Felix, as always. 952-784-4000, the phone number. studio@talkradioeurope.com is the email, and the Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official on the emails. Thank you very much. Suggested that I play the speech made by Charlie Chaplin from the film The Great Dictator, pre-World War II. Perhaps the best speech ever made, which covers Kim, Trump, Gettysburg, Nazis. Yeah, if you are on YouTube or whatever, look out for Charlie Chaplin. Speech from The Great Dictator. Back after this.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
Listening to Giles Brown on Viewpoint Talk Radio Europe's current affairs programme with a panel. We're going to move away from the United States. Last week, a gang was convicted of abusing girls supplied with alcohol and drugs and then forced to have sex in Newcastle. The victims, some as young as 14, were often from a troubled background, and at least one was in care. It was Operation Sanctuary, the police operation that captured these men. However, the biggest controversy or a big issue in this case was the fact that it was revealed that Northumberland police had paid £10,000 to a convicted child sex attacker for information that led to the arrests of these men. Nathan, is it ever ethically, morally approachable to or right to pay a criminal, especially one who's a child abuser, for this sort of information?
Well, ethics and morals are, of course, relative. Different people, different groups have different ethics, different morals. The police say they have a job to do, and doing their job often, you know, they do things that they would rather not, perhaps, that they may find distasteful. But the question is it worth doing that to get the job done? I mean, you know, they pay informants, it doesn't matter what police department you're talking about, I don't think. I mean, they all do it because you need people who have information, and basically they're not going to just run up and tell you. Some people do, of course, but police, you know, use informants. They use paid informants, and they say they get results that way. I mean, for them to try to take a police officer and infiltrate this child sex organization to get the same type of information they were able to get from somebody who was already a part of it could take months, years, whether this person would be found out, whether the whole thing would be wasted. It's not a nice way of doing things, but it's not a nice thing, and the police justify it by saying, I mean, they do say the end justifies the means.
And we have a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
It's Robert. He's just used the phrase I was going to use, the end justifies the means.
Well, does it?
Well, I think so. I mean, this was a situation which was, you know, seemed to be out of control. Youngsters were oppressed. Youngsters were pushed into slavery, into uninhabitable places. And if it meant that to get them out of that and bring and stop this sort of nonsense, then I do believe that the method that was used to achieve that did justify the end.
Thank you for your call in there, Robert. The call in 952-784-4000 is the phone number. Robert McAngus.
Haven't people been paid for information since time began? Judas, for example, he was paid for information. It's a normal way of getting to know what the others are doing without bringing religion into it. You have to understand what's going on the other side. As Nathan just said, that it cuts the time down tremendously. So if you're going to pay somebody and get all of the news, the information about who's the ringleader, and to stop these girls having sex in Newcastle, for God's sake, I mean, it really and truthfully, it's worth it. There is a means to the end.
We go live to the lines again. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Oh, hello. It's Bertil, the Swedish. I'm sitting here in my finca in Kilsjö. Look, I love your program. I never miss it. But the thing is, I've had three businesses in America. I didn't employ many people. I said between 7 and 10. I had one trucking business. I transported a bull wagon, big animals, I mean, across all over America. 40 states, actually, backwards and forwards from the East Coast and West Coast. Now, the thing is this... I'm a bit annoyed here with us here in Europe. I think the whole European community is a little bit brainwashed, because we're watching here CNN. That's where we get our news. And that is just the left-wing part of the Democrats.
Yeah. Thank you for your call in. We're just trying to keep it on. We've moved on from the
No, but I mean, that is why we don't get the right news here, what's happening in America. I have emails from America 2-3 times a week from old friends there. And they are fed up with what CNN is vomiting all the time on Trump when he's doing a very good job.
Thank you for your call in there. Good to have you with us. We're looking at the implications of paying informants to help you with your criminal charges. I think the thing is, I mean, if it was, you could argue that if it was if you were paying a grass, shall we say, it was organised crime, if you had a man inside the mob and you were giving him £10,000 and that, or $10,000, that wouldn't be a problem. If it was somebody from the DEA, if it was a drug dealer who was going to grass up, you know, the Mr. Big of the drug world, it wouldn't be a problem. However, as this is a convicted child rapist, I think that people have had, you know, this is the thing that doesn't sit well with people. Heather?
Sure, there's always more sensitivities involved. It's something that people have a harder time, and I think a lot of it is people who are parents, it's hard for them to think about it with their own children, and it's just, it's something that cuts you much more deeply in your soul when you hear about that. But I think, you know, thinking of it from that perspective, if there was something going on to my child and somebody was able to provide help for them, even if they had already done it, I would think that should be appropriate to take care of that.
Going to the email studio@talkradioeurope.com. I don't like the idea of paying an informant. I think it may corrupt the information. However, sometimes it is the only way to get information. Unfortunately, it is not your local paragon of virtue who will have the information, but the members of the particular criminal gang. That is burglars, no local burglars, etc., etc. Who would you go to for the information? In days gone by, the Bobby on the beat may have picked up information concerning various crimes reported, unreported, or under discussions. These days, the Bobby is no longer there. Information is not being given to the police nearly as much, nor is it as reliable. Good move, governments. So the police are going to have to go to these informants, because they are now being reactive rather than proactive policing. Robert?
Yeah, but this has happened since time immemorial, as I said. Now, I used Judas as an example. But reality is that in most major crimes, people give information in, maybe not necessarily for the £10,000 that you discussed there, maybe it's for a reduction of a sentence somebody gets informed on. Use the word grass, like you said. Yes, of course it happens. It doesn't matter whether you live in London, whether you live in Berlin, in Malaga, or even here. And just recently, we've had a whole series of people turning in the drug dealers here in Marbella. And that's been accounted for in that great magazine called Planet World. Planet Marbella. I've seen it and read it, so I know it to be true.
Indeed. Nathan, thank you, Robert. Nathan, your thoughts on where we go then with paying informants and where it sits morally or ethically?
Well, as I said, there's going to always be that argument, but policing has changed, and the way laws are written, the way policing has normally been done, is a crime is committed, then you do something about it. As times have changed, we now want police to prevent things from happening and stop them before the crime is committed. And one of the ways you do this is with information. And the question is, how do you get the information? And there are all sorts of ways, of course. One of the ways is you pay for it. And generally, if you're looking for information about criminals, the person you're going to be paying who has the information is going to be a criminal of one sort or another. It's the reality. And if you don't do it, then you have to wait until the crime is committed and hopefully catch them afterwards.
Europe Today.
Reporting from across the region and the world.
We must lift the uncertainty caused by Brexit.
Europe Today.
In the first step, we will deal with the most pressing issues, citizen rights, the single financial settlement and other separation issues.
Stephen Ritson.
Now we have a shared responsibility to deliver quick and substantive progress.
Weekdays at midday.
There's a long way to go, but we're off to a promising start.
Listening to Giles Brown on TRE Talk Radio, your voice in Spain. Into the last couple of minutes of the programme. Couldn't resist this one because Big Ben's chimes will stop because of concerns about the hearing of workers involved in a restoration scheme. The Mail today reports that Health and Safety has succeeded in silencing the bells with the Luftwaffe. Failed, the Sun said the project was all bong wrong. And the Telegraph says in a leader column that the most famous emblem of the nation is being silenced at a crucial time as the UK negotiates its terms of new identity. We'd have to get a Brexit story in there, of course, every issue of Viewpoint. Nathan?
Well, the health and safety issue seems a little strange because, granted, there has to be work done on Big Ben, we are told. I doubt if that work is going to take 4 years. And yes, in the Houses of Parliament, there's going to be, obviously, over the past or the next 4 years, a lot of work done. But let's face it, there's a lot of people in the Houses of Parliament every day and have been for hundreds of years, and Big Ben hasn't really been a health and safety issue from the bongs for them. I don't know why the workmen are going to suffer that much more than anybody else who's around.
Probably no worse than working on an AC/DC concert.
Yes. Well, again, if they're actually working in the bell tower of Big Ben, yes, you might want to for a day or two or even a week, whatever time they're working right in the bell tower. Okay, health and safety may rule that, but 4 years?
And in an issue, an editorial that you might like, Heather, the Telegraph also says, if the Ravens are to be dispatched from the Tower, because obviously the reference is this, if the Ravens leave the Tower of London, the Crown and Britain will fall. That's completely in your sphere of influence, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because here we've got like monuments again, and we were just talking about with Charlottesville. See, it all comes together, the history, and there's all just a full circle. But I'm not really particularly worried about this. I don't think the Queen needs to be upset if the Ravens go away.
Well, it might give more fuel to the fire, though, in the Brexit negotiations, Nathan. Mm. Robert, you're being remarkable.
Brexit negotiations are going to be affected by everything.
Indeed, Ravens or no Ravens. Robert, do you have any thoughts on bongs? I know we talk about...
Well, I wrote an article in the Daily Thistle today about Big Ben and the closing of the sound and the fact that it wouldn't be till 2020 till it came back, and that the Elizabethan Tower, which it's actually in, the Elizabethan Tower, is the name of the tower that Big Ben, the bell, is contained within. And that's the problem. It's not the bell itself, although the clock and et cetera needs work. It's also the tower needs restoration because the whole of the Westminster is basically falling down. Do I think that the sound of bells affect the politicians? No, because half of them aren't there. That's the real reason. It doesn't affect them at all because it doesn't reach out to Christchurch and out to Titchmarsh and all the other places that they come from, because they're really not representing the English people in the way that they should do.
And of course, the thing is, when the bells again chime across ye old London town, the UK will no longer be a member of the EU. We'll have had Brexit, so there'll be... For whom the bell tolls in post-Brexit Britain, Big Ben. And if I can get any more alliteration in that particular sentence, I will eat my particularly splendid baseball cap. Right then, almost out of time. It's been a pleasure and my privilege to be with you for another another exciting viewpoint. Stephen Ritson will be with us. Stephen Ritson has just let me know that the Big Ben bongs are in fact in E. There you go. That's the note they play. And if you're wondering about the
E by Gumba, really good.
Yeah. My thanks, as always, the bongos are here with us once again. My thanks to my guest today, Heather Testo.
Thank you. It's been great to be here.
Robert McCangus, as always.
Thank you very much.
And, of course, former AGB correspondent Nathan Thomas. Nathan.
Always a pleasure.
We will be back with Viewpoint next weekend. It will be repeated at 6 o'clock tonight. Stephen Ritson up next.
Views expressed on Viewpoint by invited studio guests and callers do not constitute an opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe SL.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.